102.
The upside of failure.
Proof that a setback can lead to a step forward.
Upside of failure time. And I'm just going to simply ask, why are you playing hard to get with me, girl?
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to finally be here.
I always try to recall when I met somebody before or first encountered their work. And I remember seeing you on screen or on Insta. I can't remember, but I thought, who is this beautiful woman? Like, I need to follow. I'm loving her vibe. And then you were speaking about your daughter as Bean. And at that time, I was also just becoming a mom.
A mama too.
And I thought, I love just how you were just embracing that journey and making it look so easy, even though we know it's not
easy. You know, I literally just saw TikTok today who said, having kids not that hard when I catch you. Whoever told me that, when I catch you, it's on site.
You actually have to, I need to send you this interview I think his name is Adam Sandberg of SNL. Who said when you have kids or before you have kids, everyone's like, it's great. It's great, amazing. And then you have the kid and then you're dying and you go to the people and they're like, that's horrible. You're like, why did you tell me? They're like, we need you to suffer with us.
Yeah, Elizabeth loves company. I'm joking.
They suck you into the cult. But I'm wondering, for you, when you were growing up, was that something you always wanted to be? You just knew you always wanted to be a mom.
It's such a cliche thing to say. I think everyone says this, but like for me, it was really something that was innate, that I've always wanted to be a mom. I've been very nurturing to my friends, my family. So having a family of my own was something that I absolutely was a life goal for me to do.
Oh, and I think people sometimes think that that comes from a place of trauma, but it's not always the case.
No, so place of love.
Yes.
Having experienced love for my mom and my family, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to actually share with somebody else. You know, I look at the relationship I have with my mother and I look at her and it's like, I really would love to have a little mini me who I can share such moments with as well. Have someone who's my best friend that I made from scratch. And I think those things like that is what made me want to have a child of my own, was that experiencing so much love for my mom and my family that
Yes. And I mean, I love the embracing it, because it's not that you're not even open about the hardships. I mean, we know social media can be brutal because everybody's like a couch ref during a soccer match. Ah, coach, why?
Go left, you go know, right, it's why.
Now, for example, even with like breastfeeding, I mean, I got so much flack when I posted on World Breastfeeding Day and I was breastfeeding my child.
But imagine,
for me, what I was expressing that was, it's like, I struggled to get milk, and the fact that my baby could latch and I was still able to keep going.
Such a momentous milestone. Yes, right? It was.
And then people trash you. And I'm wondering, have you found that the most judgmental and difficult parts of motherhood come from women? Or do you feel they come? Where do you think it comes from?
It's rather unfortunate for me that almost a lot of the unpleasant experiences that I've experienced in terms of people having an opinion that it's good, that it's bad, unfortunately, be it about my body, be it about my parenting style, unfortunately, has come from other women. And for me, it makes me so sad. It was, out of everyone else on this whole planet, you should know better. You should know how that feels. You should know how talking about the fact that breastfeeding is not that great outside. Your mom probably breastfed you, or your aunt breastfed somebody in your family. So how do we shame women for something that's so natural for us to do? Us having children, our bodies changing, is something that's so natural. It happens to every one of us on this whole planet that are walking it. And as you are experiencing it with me, how can you have a negative opinion about it?
I think it was last year we had a conversation on the show where I said, those of you that are parents, be honest, what did you used to judge other parents for? And then you lived it.
Okay, so
you have to tell me. Mine was that I would see toddlers in diapers and think, aren't you supposed to be, you look too big.
These things are strong. There's no month less than the guys. Yo, a toddler. I am so scared. Like, we're scared of her in the house. We we're so scared of her. We are so scared of her. We don't want to upset her. We don't want to make her mad. We are so scared of her. And she's four. And some sabasonke.
So what did you used to judge parents for before? And now you're like, oh, my bad.
My one has to be the things that they say the kids said. I'm like, ain't no way your three-year-old, four-year-old said that.
Yeah.
There's no way Inganyako and a four or three actually ever said those words. And now I'm on the receiving end.
Yes.
I said, did y'all hear what she just said?
No, and the thing is, you will say, but we don't talk like this in the house.
At home,
where does this
even
come
if it's something
from?
That's very intellectual, something that's very funny. Mm. I'm like, there's no way your four-year-old said a joke that an adult will say. I'm like, but she did say it. She's really, that's what she said. I'm not making this up. You know, I feel like that's definitely the take-home that I've had, that kids really do say the darndest things, the most smartest things, and the most shocking things at any point in time.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. It's so weird. I remember the... I don't know what was happening, but I was having a bad day. And my son just randomly is like, Mommy, I love you, ne?
Mm.
Askis, Mommy, I love you. And I was just like, is this my little two-year-old just out of nowhere?
Like, sometimes kids, I really feel like they tend to have an EQ that's better than that of adults. That's one thing I've realized with my daughter. I'm like, when I'm EQ,
but you know why? Because we are in our overthinking era.
Mm.
So all the natural instincts when it comes to that emotional intelligence, we shut it down, we dismiss it as like, no, don't be silly.
Just being proactive, just let's keep it moving, let's keep it going. Whatever it is, it needs to go, it needs to happen. I think as adults, that's really one thing that we actually don't do a lot of. We don't look each other in the eyes and actually look if you really are okay, as opposed to your child to talk to you holding your face like this, and they can see if you actually are happy, if you actually are sad, and they ask you, are you okay? Mototo asked me, Mommy, are you making a sad face? Are you okay? Make a happy face. This is even after she's upset me though sometimes. So it kind of works both ways, good and bad. She's, you know, there's a lot of power in those little people.
Yes.
So she's a little asked me after she's made me upset. Make a happy face.
Make a happy face, Mom. What has it taught you about yourself, the whole motherhood journey? And it's ongoing. Just when you think you figured the kid out, you got to learn them all over again because they're growing.
First thing I did was apologize to my mom.
Oh, girl.
I said, girl, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. I did not know. You know, and for me, it's taught me so much more about like loving and the capability of what my heart can do and how big my heart can actually get. That I can look at one person and love them so much, like my whole heart and soul. I'm like, how is this even possible? Even ask my mom, like, man, after so long, she says, yes.
If anything,
that's too much.
Your mom and you found that you think you can't love your child more and you love them more. Can you imagine how much your mom loves you as your grown
one of us? She says sometimes she has deja vu. Like so many things that she does remind her so much of me that she has to like look back and like just laugh at herself and smile at herself. So thank God, thank you that I'm able to experience it this twice over.
My dad said to me last week, because I'm always like, please don't act like you want me to visit. You want to see your grandchild.
That's it, period.
You know, and he said, my child, you are the milk. The grandkids are the cream.
It's over. It's over for you. It's a wrap. There's something better now. There's something that's more exciting now. You know, and I think that's what grandparents actually are about. Like, it's something that's so beautiful to look at my mother mothering again, almost to say, and then still having the capability to even mother me sometimes, you know, and then I mother her. I'm just like, it's like literally a mother cycle that's happening here, because my daughter's also very, very strong-willed as well as a person. So to look at us all together, I'm just like, this is actually amazing.
But
and this
you
is
do
exactly
know,
what.
You do know, because you have a girl, that your mother, when you were in her womb,
she was there too.
Your daughter
was there too.
Yes. So your mother carried the both of you, literally.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I know. I love that.
And that means that
so much.
You carried when you have a granddaughter. So I have a son. I mean, technically, my mom also carried my son. But isn't that such
a
beautiful
thing
to know?
That's the power of a woman's body.
Right?
Like, you can't help but look at it in so much awe. There's so much to witness, so much to literally look and say, this is absolutely amazing that our bodies can do this.
What was growing up like for you? I mean, were you the type of child who was hard on yourself? Because you speak about being this nurturer, and many nurturers will see things like failure, not as what happens at school, but as like, oh, I couldn't make this person feel better, or I wish people weren't disappointed. What was it really like for you?
I think for me, it was that I grew up in a household full of love. And not that it was a perfect household.
Yes.
It was a household full of love, the most importantly. And I think growing up and realizing as a person who feels a lot more maybe than other people do, and I'm an empath at heart, so I'll always think about how something's going to make you feel before I actually even think about how it could make me feel possibly.
Mm.
And that's something I'm working on now as well as an adult. It's great, but it's not that great sometimes. You know, I just have to put myself first. And so moments like that for me are things that I feel added so much more layers and character to the person that I am today and the nurture that I am today. I grew up very close to my grandparents, so I was able to take care of them quite a lot. Mm. My grandfather also took care of me so much. Like, he'd still walk with me to the bus stop. Mangineskoleni, have to catch the 5:30 bus. He'd walk me in winter. You know, so it's the nurturing part comes also from a place of being nurtured.
Mm.
And naturally wanted to give that off because that's what I was given and experienced.
And how did you approach school? Because school had so many spaces. I mean, you being a creative, did you struggle with academics, or were academics a space you flourished in? Were you a sporting girl? Because I think those.
Yeah, he's sporting again. He's a little too much of a yeah.
I feel like.
Aye, aye, aye.
those early days where we're still trying to figure out
who we are,
right? We place some kind of view of what failure is based on these aspects of our lives. And I'm wondering where for you was that sitting? Was it like, oh my gosh, I'm so great at academics, this is the thing that makes me shine? Or what was it for you when you were growing up?
I think academics is also a child that says has boundless potentials. If only she would concentrate a little bit more in class and stop disturbing the class and talking. But I guess now that I'm here, I'm on the radio talking to you, it kind of made sense. You know, so I'm not going to be too mad at that comment. So look where it got me. But now, Kwana, Lola, Lele, stay in school and concentrate. Don't sit at the back of the class. Focus in the front, writing with your kids there. I think when it comes to moments like that, I think you said a good point. Like at which point do you get to be yourself?
Mm.
And I think when you start navigating high school, it's almost like where you realize, but it's not even just yourself. So much more has been put onto who you actually are by the society that you're in. Mina bengazi ngunopeta, I'll just make one silly example. I don't know, ngunopeta kiss kiss, if you don't know what that is. I thought I was in high school.
Linda, you must translate to English.
What is it? Oh, you're kiss kissing in English, guys. What is the kiss kiss in English?
Kiss kiss madolo.
Yes.
Oh, what is bracket legs.
Brackets.
No, those are cool. Inside bracket legs.
I'm not sure about the inside bracket legs.
When the knees touch each other.
Yes.
So it's the open bracket legs.
Yes.
So the knees are touching.
Conclusion. They're not opening enough. They're in conclusion of what has happened.
Did they make fun of you?
Yes, they did. So taking that part and now trying to learn yourself and adjust yourself as a person where now you feel like you already are inadequate.
Somebody helped us. Knocked knees.
Knocked knees.
Thank you.
Yes, it is. It is knocked knees. That's correct, because I had to Google it in high school and find out what it is that was wrong with me.
Yes.
I ended up wearing pants majority of my high school life because of that. And only later on in life did I realize, hey, but there's nothing wrong with my legs. And it's actually other people, society told me something was wrong with my legs. Knocked knees is actually very normal. It occurs to a lot of people, more common than not anyone else, actually. It's the most common thing that actually is. So I'm just like, for me, having to deal with that and how I've responded to that as an adult, failure starts from very young.
Mm.
You know, failure starts from little things like asking yourself why your dad didn't come see you.
Mm.
What's wrong with you as a child? Why doesn't your dad want to come see you, spend time with you? And you feel like you're the failure and you're just a child. There's nothing wrong that you did.
Mm-hmm.
And that also stemmed from why I was so sure of wanting to be a parent and wanting to have a family, because of things like that, that obviously made me who I am today.
How did you process that? I mean, we have a parenting and parents feature, and we don't just deal with conversations around us being parents and how to do things for our children. We also deal with us being children, because we're going to be children, right, forever. Mm. And some of the childhood,
that's exactly what I believe.
We're children forever.
Like, and I think after having a child, for me, I'm just like, guys, this is just some kids. It's not the same guy. We have
exactly.
Jobs, playing make believes in our little lives, but we really are a bunch of kids.
And even in that conversation, so one of the key things we talk about, especially now, last week, and this coming week, we've been talking about step parents, parents that stepped in. We spoke with Mo Flavor yesterday about his biological father not being in his life and stepping in later. And he recently went through a ritual of changing his surname. And everybody deals with that so differently. Mm. How have you been able to deal with that, because all children take on
yes.
that whole thing as if there's something wrong with them. You yes. attach it to your worth mm. of if a dad is not around. Like, what was your understanding of what was happening?
First, the child, it sucked so much because he didn't live far from my house. First of all, he was not even far from my house. And I'd see him like a stranger going to buy bread.
How what? Embarrassing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, so you knew who he was?
Very well. He lived like, if you were here, like literally around the corner from my house. Like, I'm not even being dramatic. And see him like a stranger. And we're like, oh my God, hey dad. Like that.
So did you refer to him as
yes,
Baba
or Baba the whole time?
Yes.
I think now as an adult, to be honest, I think we constantly deal with that hurt, hey? I always say that my father, unfortunately, I've heard this quote before, was the first man to ever break my heart. And that's the absolute truth. He was.
I think dads underestimate
the influence they have in their children's yes. lives. Absolutely.
Yes, both boys and girls.
And, girls.
Yeah. And in terms of that experience, how did, you know, and obviously it's horrible for a mother because they try to protect you.
Mm.
How did she do that for you? How did she try to shield you? Because some moms, we've had so many experts coming to say, this man keeps disappointing my child. Can what I just tell I my child he died? Can I just tell my child? Because I don't want to deal with this the disappointment.
Mm.
How did mom do it for you? And now being a mother, what would you advise other moms can do to protect, but not, you're not protecting the dad,
the
you're
truth.
Protecting the child.
The child, yes, because yes. the child needs to be protected. And what my mother did was talk to me to my understanding.
Mm.
I've learned so much from my mom, even in how she navigated that, that one thing she did do was never talk badly about my dad. She never bashed him in front of me. She said, if you want to go see them, an unfortunate thing was the time Israeli is the teller.
Mm.
And time did tell me.
So
how
you
far
got
I
to yes
to them and to him
yourself.
As well.
Yeah.
So I can't ever one day look back at my mom and say I wish she had done things differently. I think she did it as best as she possibly could, and she did a great job at it, to be honest. And with him, she always left the door open. She never closed that door for my dad. Never closed the door. Ever, ever, ever. It was just him whenever walked in.
Where is your relationship with him today?
Oh, he passed away.
And how did that make you feel when it happened?
Crazy story. I was a teenager, like 14 or whatever, I think 14, 15, when he passed away. And even at that age, I remember talking to mom and I said to her, at least now I know where he is.
Yo. Hmm.
At least now I know where he is, because I don't have to ask why I didn't call me for my birthday when I come see me for this, but I didn't even help my mom with anything. There was no excuses for anything. He's not here. I can't do it. As opposed to having a person who is here and you have the hope that they can and they just don't.
Did you go to the funeral?
Yes, I did go to the funeral.
And did that give you closure, or do you in some ways feel like certain things are still left open?
I think it gave me a lot of closure, because even the opening wasn't that great. At least now it's closed. I mean, obviously as a person you grow up, you always long for love from your father and your parents who have them like that. And not having that obviously affected me quite a bit. But in the same breath, my mom did so much more to make sure that I was great and I was okay. And even now as an adult, I appreciate it so much more.
So how do you view now in your life that father figure role?
The father figure role is very important. I think every single dad should be involved in a child's life, no matter the circumstances. You know, my dad had a twin, and I make an analogy about them all the time.
What?
The twin also passed away, but he had a twin.
What?
Yeah, my dad had a twin. There's two of them.
What?
And his twin.
Sorry, I'm in shock, because were they identical?
Identical twins, yeah. Identical twins. And only in terms of how they looked, because my uncle's so weird, but my uncle and I have a sister, Amanda. She's born in April and I am born in November, same year. And he would walk. She even stayed further away.
Yes.
He would walk to see her. Even if just one, and these identical twins raised in the same household and in the same circumstances, but it's about the choices that they made. So I think even now in any household, it's really important that you play your role as a father. Kids don't want presents. They want your presence, actually.
Did your uncle ever try and sort of take on that role, you know?
He passed away first. Maybe he had... I don't know. Maybe he had it first. Would be a different story. But yeah, I think that's what I'm saying. Like, in terms of even navigating parenthood now, it's very important that a person do you try your best to make sure that your child grows up with both their parents, or at least an understanding of both of them? And I know that the onus can't be just on one party. It has to be both parties. The ones that are there making the baby must be doing the babies here.
Yes, yes. Did anybody ever take on a father figure role in
your life? I did. I had an amazing stepdad. His name was Moses. And I always look at him and just like, he actually kind of showed me what love is supposed to look like, what a man is supposed to look like at home as well. He's always the guy who said that you can't just come home with a tazel, buy some milk on the way back home. Like, he was that person. He would rock up. I remember going to school, and my school wasn't far from home. And he'd come, like those running shorts, but the tiny ones,
the tiny ones.
He'd come to school wearing those, but he'd bring me KFC, you know. So it's like, oh, it's a bit of a catch 22. My dad's here in these little tiny shorts, but he did bring me KFC, you know. And he was that guy. Like, he was such an active part of my life. It was every concert, every little event that I tried to do, every little sports thing. I was terrible at sports. He still came to watch. So I think I've learned a lot of what love's supposed to look like based off him and how he loved me. Obviously, now as an adult, I can't speak of their love as my parents, but how he loved me, father to child, I commend him a lot.
And it's so beautiful that you did get an opportunity to experience that. How differently do you think, if that figure in your life was not there at all, how different of a person do you think you'd be today?
I think I'd have to be constantly looking for a good reference point of what love's supposed to look like from the opposite sex. I think it'd be very difficult to actually kind of navigate it and see it. As much as I'd know that this is love, but like, what do I measure it based off? How is he supposed to treat me? I'd have to learn that by myself, and I'd have a lot of learning to do. So I think I'm grateful that he was there and kind of shortened the period of me having to learn what that looks like and or receiving it, because I'm able to recognize it so much faster now, because literally I was brought up in such a loving home from both sides, you know, from my family and having him. Like, I know what love looks like, and I know love. I can recognize it walking
Love that. When we come back, we continue with this upside of failure. Get your questions and comments in 011-883-0702 in the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702.
702.
The upside of failure.
Proof that a setback can lead to a step forward.
The upside of failure, as we do on a Friday. We've been in conversation with award-winning actress Linda Mthoba, but she also does quite a good job on the social streets. I mean, influenza.
Oh, my radio's on.
We're taking your calls on 011-883-0702 and the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. What was it like when the river came to an end for you?
Oh, my goodness. My heart was sad. It was sad, but all good things do come to an end. And I think that's the beauty of television. I think they've lived in our people's homes for, what, 5-6 years?
Yes.
5 years. So it was really beautiful how it ended. It's a beautiful story to tell as well. So when that ended, it's like, oh, wow, that's exciting. But what's next?
Right. How have you dealt with the rejection that obviously comes with this industry? I was talking to Abel, our technical producer, about 2 weeks ago, I always tell him what I'm working on outside of the building, and I'll be like, I'm preparing for a pitch. And he'll say to me, people don't know how many rejections you're getting.
Until we get that, yes.
When I'll be like, I never got that job. They just see you, the ones you get.
Only the wins. They never see shooting in the gym.
Right?
Only when you score. They don't know how long it took for you to actually get that one goal in. And I think that's really something that's important, because failure is part of our everyday process. It's part of everyday life. Like, literally every single day you're failing at something. Be it that you really wanted to get there 5 minutes early from work, and then, you know, the time gremlin. I have really terrible time gremlins. They just eat my time. I don't know how. And then,
but she was early today.
I was early today. Thank you very much. Let's go here, make sure.
If anybody's listening going, I know Linda's always late. No. Today she was early.
Somewhere out there, someone said it. Thank you for clarifying that. So I think, talking about that, having to understand that people audition so many times for different roles, it's just part of life. It really is just part of life. You're going to get it, and you're not going to get it sometimes. And one thing I've always said is that you must always be prepared for a yes or a no. Be prepared for a yes, get in there, do your full best, and leave there knowing that it's yours. And if it's not yours, it's okay. They called you, someone else will call you.
So when you started out, I mean, the industry in itself, other than the jobs that you auditioned for, it's a game as well, because now it's changed. It's about building a brand. Yes. It's about being able to monetize as much as you can. When you started out, what was the thing that was keeping you there? Because there are moments you're like, why am I doing this? Mm. I still have those moments. What was that thing that was keeping you doing this thing?
I've always say that my work in the industry is always like an endless love story. I fell in love with it. And you know, as love stories goes, it's great sometimes, it's not great the other time. Then they come back, like, I'm so sorry, please. Then we fix things. Okay, let's fix things. It's literally been like that. It's been a beautiful love story. And I fall in love with it a little bit more every day, to be very honest. Disappointments are obviously part and parcel of it, 100%. But now, Korn, it's really kind of so rewarding to also see the impact and a positive impact having people's lives, which I think is very important. Like, you know, I meet random moms outside, especially, you know, I talk a lot about parenting because we're both moms. Yes. And I think we've shared that quite a bit. And they're like, you know what? The other day I wore a top with stretch marks on because you wore that picture. I saw on Instagram your stretch marks were out, and I said, you know what, I'm going to wear my top today because if Linda can do it, I can do it. Yes. And I looked at I was down to my best friend, also happened to be my manager, and I looked at her and I said, what? She's like, yes. This happens all the time. And it does happen all the time. And I think it's even if it's 5 people, 3 people, 4 people that I've able to impact their life in a positive manner like that, I take it in so much stride. Would at least let my platform be a platform that makes you feel good about yourself and makes you feel like you're very normal and a very average person as well, which is what I am. And I think one thing I've so much pride in is that that's how I treat myself. I'm very authentic in myself. I am right now. Okay, excuse the face beat because I was coming to see you, and I said after so long, ain't no way I'm gonna come here without an eyebrow on, because I want you to see me today how I look. Okay, I'm gonna give it my best.
I literally always tell the listeners that the upside of failure guests always come dressed up. You guys do the absolute most.
We're on the upside right now. That's why we're here.
But also, I want everyone to know, right? My new thing is always like, never look like your problems.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So knowing that, one of the things that I struggle with is, and you are quite established in the space of doing content and partnering with brands. How do you deal with not feeling like doing stuff? Because when you arrive on set with a script, it's a different energy. It's a different psyching. When it comes to content, you sometimes it's just you and your phone and you've got a deadline, but you genuinely don't feel like doing it. Like, how do you manage that other than the motivation of paying bills?
The bills part is great, but then I think it's really important to fall apart. Just choose when you do it. You know, just don't do it just haphazardly. I fall apart in private. That's one thing I've always said to like my friends and my best friends and my family. I'm just like, it's okay to fall apart, because when I do fall apart, I know that you guys are there picking up the pieces with me. And sometimes you literally have to go to work, get over and done with. The moment you close the door, get in the motor with the driver, I allow myself to fall apart, because I've had it, see, I've tried to put it together the whole day.
Yeah.
And literally sometimes it was a repair with a piece of string.
Just hoping barely staying
to just
together.
Get by the day.
Yes.
You know, so I think it's things like that where I allow my heart and my soul to feel whatever it has to feel, but I just give it a time and a place for it. That's the most important part. Unfortunately, that being an adult, I wish I was 4 and I could just have a tantrum right now for really not getting my way, but I can't. Why? Because I'm an adult. So I need to either find the quiet corner somewhere or just wait to go home and do it privately.
Yeah. And I think it's quite difficult managing that part. I know when I started out in the industry, my very first publicist said, if you only want people to talk about your private life, only talk about your work,
yeah.
Right? And I, you know, with the content space, we try our best. You want to share bits, but also keep parts to yourself.
To yourself, absolutely.
How do you find that balance? I mean, you are high profile in terms of just what you do, but as an actress, but also you working in other spaces. How do you find that balance? Because social media is sharing yourself. Even me doing radio, I'm regularly telling the listeners what's happening in my life, but there are parts of your life you want to keep to yourself. So how do you figure out what you should keep to yourself?
I think it's the things that are harder to say that I shouldn't say. If I'm having a tough time saying it, I shouldn't say it. Because that means that this is not the right space for me to be talking about, because I'm such a free person. I am honestly, I'm an oversharer. If you put me in a corner somewhere, you will know everything about me in 5 minutes. And I've had to learn that not everyone deserves your vulnerability, one. Not everyone deserves all of you and all your hearts and everything that you're feeling, especially people that are not actually part and parcel of your life.
Mm.
In as much as I have an audience to share with, and I'm saying this because it's possible to be yourself and to be authentic and to be completely who you are without having to share everything there is to know about you as well. And it's a tough balance. It is a tough balance because I find myself thinking, oh gosh, like I speak to my cousin and she's like, oh, I was at the shop and someone recognized me. She's like, I guess this all the time. And then I thought, oh, I feel so bad about that because I'm taking away parts of you that are also very private, you know? Mm. So it's having to try find that balance now where I'm actually a bit more protective of my family and my loved ones than I was probably before. Mm. And it's a learning, it's a trial and error thing. I have moments of vulnerability because at the end of the day, I'm also human. The people I speak to are also very human, going through a human experience. We're all here together, walking this human life, having human experiences that we share every single day without fail. Whether it's something good, something bad, something sad, with someone else experienced it as well. So it's not just individually your problem. Someone else has felt what you have felt, had been through what you've been through, maybe in a different way, but nonetheless, the feelings are all familiar.
Do you have nerves about sharing Bean, your daughter,
yes,
on social media? When I was deciding if I'm going to share my son on social media, you're one of the people I looked at where I was like, okay, she's doing it in a very just a way that I admire, because you still, as a parent, want to be like, look at my baby,
at my
you
baby.
Know, right?
Look at you my still, baby.
You still want to be like, I did that. I made this.
This is all me.
Right?
Yeah.
But then we also are very aware of how vulnerable.
How about weird foods?
People are not just weird, they're predatory. And it's not always, people think predatory behavior is always sexual. It's not always predatory.
It's not.
People can be predators by just wishing ill on you.
Yes.
Right? Where I'm like, she's so pretty. She's getting these jobs. Why? She's getting this. Now she's even got a child. Yep. So how do you consolidate all of that for yourself? I mean, my son has his own account. He shoots content even without me, like his created its own little life.
That is so cute.
And then when I see videos, I'm like, oh, that's so cute.
Well done. Look at you.
And he's loving it. Mm. But I do get nervous just because people
of
are
society,
weird.
People are a little bit weird. One thing that I've told myself is that no one should have more accessibility to my life than myself. I should control what that is and what that looks like. And when it comes to my daughter, I've just realized that rather than impose that as and when I want to, how I feel like it, she's not a complete part of me as a person. But because of my mom, I can't separate that from myself.
Yes.
And that's a choice that I made for myself and for the work that I have and just me as a person, as my personality is that I am. I'm very family orientated. So having my child, I can't just completely shut her off from the world like that because she's part and parcel of who I am. She brings me so much joy, so much happiness. And above that, it also is such a connecting piece for some other moms and families out there as well who also are raising their own children. And I think it's just really and truly just trying to find the balance of both. And I think I've tried to do a good job. At some point, I thought I'm not going to post it at all because she's getting a bit more at the age where she's more aware of her surroundings. Like the other day, we're at a kiddie's playground, whatever, and these kids came with her. And then she came to me and said, Mommy, that's what I must ask you. Are you famous? She's 4. So obviously, it's a bit older kids wanted her to ask her that. And I said to her, no, Mommy, why?
So, you know, can I tell you something that might console you? So I spoke to the parentals of the most famous South African kid on socials at the time, and granny as well. And I said, what have been the pros of sharing your child? And they said, she's better prepared for a world where people know she has famous parents.
True.
And she doesn't get bullied at school because she's so equipped.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing that made me decide. I said, oh my gosh, the last thing
that's
I want.
That's a different way to look at it. I've never thought about that.
So I was like, okay, cool, because I'm on radio every day. The last thing I want is somebody being angry at something I said, and then my child is just not even aware of what I do. So does that make you feel better?
It does. It honestly does. I've never thought about looking at it that way. But I think for me, I thought of the adverse end of it.
Yes.
I thought of her getting preferred professional treatment from schools and the teachers and everyone else around her, where it almost doesn't base a complete reality of life either at the same time, where no one's going to be nice to you all the time. They know you here, but you're going to leave the school and leave this place and walk somewhere else. They're not going to recognize you.
Yes.
And then want to expect the same behavior and the same treatment. So I thought about it that way, where I've wanted my child to grow up completely and utterly disassociated from myself and the roles that I do. I don't even like her knowing that. She sees them on TV randomly sometimes because she's underage watching the things that I play in any event. So I've tried to kind of shield her from it, I think, because I thought of the worst.
Yes, yes. And I mean, of course, you want to protect your child. We're going to take a break. We continue with the Upside of Failure. Linda Mthoba is in the studio. Get your questions through 011-883-0702. The WhatsApp line 072-702-1702.
The Upside of Failure.
Proof that a setback can lead to a step forward.
Upside of Failure on 702. It is a Friday, 9 minutes to go until 3 o'clock. We are still chatting to Linda Mthoba and we're opening up the lines to all of you. 011-883-0702, the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. We received a voice note, which you can also send through to us for Linda.
Hi, Rolabile. This is Anonymous in Pretoria. Thank you so much for bringing your guest, Linda Mthoba. I love her so much. I follow her on Instagram and Facebook. So I'm just inspired. I'm so eager to hear more from her. Unfortunately, I have to rush somewhere, but I know I will watch this on YouTube. For now, I can just say how I wish all the absent dads can just hear what... the kind of scar, the big scar that they may leave in their children's lives. And then I realized that just being there physically, you don't have to just pop out money. I'm learning a lot. But anyway, I'll just watch it on YouTube. Thank you so much for bringing Linda. Linda, I love you so much.
I love you too. That was so sweet. I love you too. I love you so much. Thank you for that.
How does that make you feel hearing strangers share love to you? Is it humbling every time?
It's more than that. I find that I love so much that when I receive it, it still blows me away. I'm just like, here you are just loving me and I love you too, because that's what love's supposed to be like. There's no reason for us not love each other, to be honest.
Mbalenke Ngubani on X says, love the interview. Thank you for bringing her, Lebogile. And Pumeza says, what a wonderful, wholesome conversation. Hashtag love it. You can literally hear that you guys are having such a fun time in the studio.
And we really are. Like,
even the Tuagutua says tool as tool.
And I think, you know, I have thought in my mind, when would be the right time? Like, at what point do you say this is no longer for me? And for me, it's like when I no longer get humbled, when I no longer get excited, when I no longer get nervous, I'm going to bow out because something died, right?
Yes.
What is it for you that would make you say, I'm done?
I would honestly have to say something that hurts my heart. Because I love this job so much and I love the roles that I have. It's a love story. So once your heart's broken from it, it's kind of hard to come back.
Yes.
You know, so that's what I think would be a determining factor. So far, so good. Absolutely in love.
You have a leading role coming up.
Absolutely in love with Dave.
Talk to me about the queendom.
It's called Queendom. I know, so you're having the, trust me, it's taken me some time to actually learn this. The queen, but it's not the queendom, Linda. It's just queendom.
Queendom.
Sorry, guys, it's all there. Queendom is my first lead role, and I've been in the industry for about 6-7 years now, so I think it's a good time for it to happen, and I'm so excited and honestly so humbled and honored for this role. It's absolutely beautiful. I can't wait for the audience to see the body of work that we've created and actually continue to create. It's coming out on the 22nd of April, which I'm so nervous about. Yo, my gosh, how am I?
Why are you nervous? Tell us why you're nervous.
Because I'm just like, it's out there for the world to see. So I think once that happens, it's very, very scary. It's no longer just yours for you to look at and enjoy. Yes. It becomes part and parcel of people's conversations, people's opinions about it. And obviously, as much as we've learned to not focus on that, you can't help but not to.
Yes.
Every now and then you'll read something off to hurt your feelings. So I think I'm nervous, but I'm also very excited. Nerves are good. It's a beautiful story to tell.
And where are we going to be able to catch it?
On BET. My character's name is Ntando Gayise. Can tell you a bit about the story. Sorry, we have time. 2 minutes. One minute.
You've got a minute, yes, to tell me a bit about
the
story.
It's a beautiful story about how fate always finds you. Where you could be living your life perfectly normal, and what is for you, as I said to you before, will always be for you. There's so many layers to the story. There's so many layers in the characters as well, where each person's actually not maybe what you think that they are. So I can't wait for the audience to actually go on this journey with us and uncover that journey and the streams and the waters that we'll all be facing together.
We have time for another voice note, 072-702-1702.
Good day, Rilebukhile. This is Gordon in Boxburg here. Rilebukhile, I want to address the elephant in the room. So I hear how loving and how bubbly and all those good things she sounds, but there's nobody going to mention how beautiful she is. I mean, I was listening to the story she shared about the kids that asked her child, is her mom famous? Maybe they don't know she's famous. Maybe she looks like she deserves to be famous.
Oh, my goodness.
A very beautiful person, I must say. Thank you.
Oh, my word. Thank you so much. Listen, if you can see my face, I'm blushing so much right now. Thanks. thank you.
I will keep telling people what is so beautiful for me about you is you are a beautiful person, but your personality makes you even more beautiful. And you are such a genuine person. From the moment, like, I think the first time we met, we just hugged each other like we've known each other forever. Right? Yeah. And I was like, your energy is just warm and yellow and bright and inviting. That nurturing thing that you speak about is so real. You light up a room. So what he said, I'll reiterate that you walk into a room and something shifts for a positive. So if people are saying, is your mom famous? I think they're thinking like, there's something about her. Okay, and that's what it is. The energy shifts in such a beautiful way.
So I just, it's going to look terrible. Thank you so much, Andrew. And the same thing for you, honestly. Like when we first met, I think we literally stood there talking for like a good 30 minutes almost in the middle of the airport. And I'll forever remember that because it's really so special. Thank you so much.
Thembile says, thanks for saying Linda's name again. Rilebogile, her best role for me was on Isibaya as Jabu's girlfriend. It was so sore when the relationship ended. What we'd like to share with all the listeners, what you've learned in life about failure.
Failure happens. Sometimes, no matter how hard you try to make sure that it doesn't happen, it happens nonetheless. Mm. But what happens is that what happens after you fail, that's the most important part. Did you fall back or did you fall forward? Mm. And by the way, falling back is okay. Maybe need time to rest and be able to get back up and feel a lot stronger after that. So failures happen to everyone and anyone, and it's hard to navigate them. It's hard to understand them. But tomorrow, the sun will shine again. Always.
Sun will shine again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
on the
me,
upside of failure. It's been such an honor having you on 702 Afternoons.
Thank you so very much, and thank you for listening.